Hello, I'm J.R. Murdoch, author of the Patio Books V&A Shipping and my current novel, Billy Barbarian, and you are listening to Short Stories of Dan Dan the Art Man, Episode 2. This short story is a near-future sci-fi tale. Wait a minute, can he do that? Well, I guess my two Patio Books are different genres. Well, great minds do think alike, don't they? You can find my work at jrmurdoch.com and ofgnomesanddwarves.com or over at patiobooks.com. Okay, let's get to that story. I hope there are no wolves in this one.
This is R2D3PO, Dan's service droid, and you are listening to My Last Day, a sci-fi short story, written and read by Dan Absalon's son. When I told him he didn't thank me for doing the audio editing in the last podcast, he said he would let me do the introduction for this one. Hey, it's something. At least he's trying. So now, that you know who does all the work around here, enjoy the story, I had fun editing it.
My stomach hurt for two reasons. The crook I was waiting to ID was on a delayed flight, and I was on my fourth cup of coffee. Coffee will do that to me when I drink too much, but I've got this problem. I can't pass up a good deal. But come on, a quarter of the price for the second cup? Who can say no to that? But the extra Java wasn't helping my already spent nerves. And once his arrival time had passed, so did my ability to relax. I wasn't used to working in the field anymore, but I took this beat for a reason. It was my last day on the job, and last chance to get intel on a group I'd been trying to bring down for a very long time. If anyone was going to ruin my chance at a strong finish, I wanted it to be me. Besides, an old guy is much less conspicuous than a hardened field agent. I looked up one more time to the screen displaying the list of flights. There it was, blinking in a menacing red glow. Delayed. I could feel my pulse beating in time with the seven bright letters, like when you notice the wipers sync with the music in your air car. My eyes were just about to attempt the news again when it stopped. No more blinking, but a new word in calm, static green. Arrived. Now I could feel my heart speeding up, and as it went into my throat, I mumbled under my breath, "Here we go." Muffled voices began floating my way from the gray tunnel beyond the arrival gate. Soon a thick crowd poured out into the terminal, like eager shoppers on Black Friday. According to a J.R. Murdoch we arrested the night before, he was supposed to be on this flight, wearing a black leather jacket. I was here to see if that was true, and haul the guy in if possible. I had Murdoch's phone and car. He was a transporter, whose impersonation I was hoping to pull off. If all went well, the criminal would get in when I pulled up, thinking I was whisking him off to a safe house. I tried to look like I was reading the news on my tablet while sneaking peeks through the crowd. He was nowhere to be seen. I was about to give up and take another sip of coffee when I spotted him near the end of the parade. With the click of a button, I had a snapshot of his face. I couldn't make my move until his identity was confirmed in the system. I left the remains of my tan, cooling coffee, and with quick strides made my way to the transport. As I walked, I sent a message to my friend and best field agent, Nate. With the photo attached, I requested that it be verified with facial recognition software. I received a message back just as I swung open the transport door. The text on my small display read, "It's him, Matt. Verify it and all. Move forward as planned." I jumped in, buckled up, and started the thrusters. While lifting away from the docking bay, I reached for the glove box and pulled out a thin piece of latex. Wrapping it tightly around my neck, I waited for his call. An unfamiliar ring sounded, and I lifted the phone to my ear. "This is Murdoch."
"I'm here. Where are you?"
a voice barked through the tiny speaker. "I had to park at the waiting dock since your flight was delayed. I'm on my way."
"Fine. Just hurry up. I'm out in the open here."
I hung up the phone and pulled the modulator from my neck. thankful that Nate had rigged one up in the car so I wouldn't have to keep using it. No one likes a sweaty neck. Nate was really into gadgets, so he was thrilled when I let him take care of the transport for me. The modulator he put in would change my voice when I used the communicator to speak to the back seat, which was separated from the front by thick Durasteel. It was a vehicle used to transport questionable people, kind of like a private taxi service for bad guys. It was a dangerous business, but highly profitable. These drivers were highly profitable to us for intel, but we could never get enough evidence on one to make an arrest. Luckily, a guy we had been trailing was caught picking up someone on our wanted list. It turns out this driver had plans with the man I was trying to track down. When we got it out of him who his next pickup was, I was glad we had his car waiting for us in the impound. The car's rear compartment was set up so the passengers couldn't see the driver. It was pretty easy to plan what came next. The only way this guy knew who would be picking him up would be from the car and the voice behind it. Pretty smart for a criminal transporter to come up with a business model that included his anonymity as part of the deal. You wouldn't want a problem with the kind of people he drove around. I landed the craft just in front of my guy. One thought burned in my mind. He would tell us everything he knew about his employer. I would make sure of that before hanging up my badge and eating cake at my retirement party tonight. He got in the back quickly, carrying a black leather briefcase matching his coat. Once in the back, I could only see him on a little display screen. It was mounted on the dash and hooked up to the camera in the back seat. As we flew off into the pale morning sky, he watched the cracked streets shrinking away through dark tinted windows. In my mind, his chance at escaping had a nice correlation with his view of the street. We didn't talk for a while, but I needed to choose a sky lane, so I activated the vehicle's comm. I'm going to need a destination.
Go to the University District, 5004 Northeast 17th Avenue.
We will be there shortly. I released the talk button and turned on the comm unit in my ear to relay the message back to Nate. I've got location of Holyfield's destination, copy?
Have location, copy that, ready to receive.
As I gave the address, my excitement grew exponentially. Usually I was a stickler about radio chatter, but I couldn't help myself. This could really be it, Nate, on my last day.
I know, we're all excited for you here. The decorations around the office look real nice.
Is that so?
Oh yeah, Matt. I asked them if they all knew who the party was for. Didn't think they'd go to all this trouble for a guy like you.
Shut up, Lowell. Are they really decorating the office up? He laughed.
They sure are.
I can't believe it. Alright, enough chatter. I'm slacking in my old age.
Alright, old-timer. Is that it, then?
No, there's just a little more. Give me a second. Let me think through this. Alright, listen. I want all active men to move in on that location and search the place.
But...
I know what you're thinking, but he's on our wanted list. That should help. See if you can get a search warrant by the time our people get there. I'm going to bring him in and try and get some information out of him.
Copy that, Captain. Balloons and everything. I mean, it's really nice.
Shut up, Nate. Get those men moving.
You got it, boss.
We continued along just fine for a while, but eventually I had to turn off into a sky lane that didn't go towards his destination, and he noticed.
Hey, driver.
So much for a peaceful ride. At least he wouldn't be getting out. The guys told me this car was reinforced just about everywhere.
Hello?
He did start asking me questions, however.
Hey, are you listening to me?
I ignored him. And when he tried calling me on the cell phone, I ignored that too. Then he went for the windows and doors. I did my best to remain focused, but I couldn't stop myself from giggling at his fruitless efforts. Having given up on the doors and windows, he tried his luck with the sunroof, which proved to be the turning point of his rage. He tried at it again with his blaster. I chuckled. I laughed even harder as I saw him hit the seats in frustration. Then he did something unexpected. He stopped hitting the seats and a smile began forming on his evil little face, as if he had forgotten some solution to his problem. He opened his briefcase and pulled out a stapler. I looked on as a spectator, becoming intrigued by what he might try next. What could he do with a stapler? Who even uses those these days? No one even uses paper anymore. Then he reached into his briefcase again and pulled out some flying goggles. He scooted over to the driver's side door, flipped back the top of the stapler, and pushed it up against the door. Then he pressed down. A bright green laser shot right through the door. I could see it in my side view mirror. It must have gone right through the door's lock, because when he was done, it swung open with a quick kick. I was baffled. Nate told me there was no way of getting out of this thing once the doors were locked. I looked down and saw him shooting off into the sky lane, bright blue jets of light thrusting him forward from the bottoms of his bulky black boots. He would easily get away if I remained in my vehicle. There was no way to keep up with him heading towards all the skyscrapers as he was. No air car can turn like a man with jet boots. I set the car's nav point to return to our station. I was losing visual quickly, so I grabbed a special rifle from the passenger seat and opened my window. His silhouette was quickly fading, but with my scope, the shot was possible. Luckily, he was flying almost straight away, so I didn't need to lead the target much. I squeezed the trigger and watched a tiny tracking ball shoot through the sky and hit him right in the butt. He jerked from the sting, which threw him off course. As he regained his balance, he tried pulling it off his pants, but it was no use. He wouldn't be getting that off, not even with his stapler. It was covered in the strongest glue in the galaxy. From the tracking display on my tablet, I saw a small blue dot appear, soaring through the city map at a blistering rate. It's just like these criminal types. When he finally decides to be in a hurry, I'm chasing him. I put down the rifle and reached past it for my jetpack. Most field agents had the boots, but I didn't see the use of wearing weighty waffle stompers while sitting behind a desk all day. For this reason, I was going old school. Strapped on tight, it felt like a heavy backpack filled with tons of thick textbooks, something my son would never know thanks to ebooks. I pulled some goggles over my eyes, swung open the door, and peered out below me at a blur of buildings, and then hesitated. It wasn't that I was getting too old for this. I was too old for this. After a few moments of telling myself I couldn't let him get away, I jumped into the sky. My climate-controlled world was replaced in a flash with one of strong, chilly winds. I didn't like the feeling of falling, so I activated the thrusters and began my chase. The initial lurch made the straps dig into my armpits. Padded as they were, I could never get used to that feeling. I looked for him towards the horizon, but he was now out of my sight. Oh, but he wouldn't be getting away. Not today, not on my last day, and not with a tracking ball stuck to his right butt cheek. I let out an inaudible chuckle, stifled by the wind blowing quickly past me with chafing force. The little blue dot indicated he was heading towards the university district. I activated my comm. "This is Selznick. The transport's returning to the station, and I'm on jetpack, pursuing Morris. He escaped from the transport. Patch me through to the ground team."
"I'm having trouble hearing you, Captain, but I think I got all of that. Putting you through." "Captain, this is Plested. Go ahead."
"All right, Mike. Listen, I want all units to continue to the location, but keep a safe distance. Everyone is to remain completely hidden until my orders change. Is that clear?"
"Yes, sir. We'll wait for your next move and remain out of sight."
"Good. I want to see what this guy is up to."
"Copy that, Captain."
Using my tracker, I was able to keep a good distance. Eventually, he slowed and started making a more direct path towards the location my team was waiting at. When the blue dot stopped, I got back on my comm.
"Does anyone have visual?"
"Affirmative, Captain."
"Good. And all other officers have remained out of sight, copy?"
"Copy that. All officers are out of sight."
"Where in the building did it look like he was going?"
"He used a secluded rear entrance, which, according to the blueprint, leads down some stairs into a storage area."
"Okay. I'm still a ways out. I want Lowell waiting to go in with me when I get there. Everyone else keep a tight perimeter. We can't let this guy escape."
"Copy that."
I poured on the speed, feeling the goggles press harder into my face. Every moment that passed seemed like the long hours in the office after I'd had a big lunch, with a large stack of paperwork set before me. When I arrived, Nathan was there, with gun drawn, ready for my lead. As I unbuckled my jetpack, I noticed he was panting. I approached him, and he swung his gun behind his back, and I thought I saw it blink green, indicating it had just finished recharging.
"You all right, Nathan?"
"What? Yeah, I'm just nervous. Your last day and all." He laughed. It was a nervous laugh I wasn't used to coming from him. I gave him a quizzical look.
"I just don't want to mess this up, that's all."
He gave a half smile, and I gave him a couple pats on the shoulder. "There's a reason I asked for you, Nate.
You're the best field agent I've got. His smile became full as I went to the other side of the door and pulled out my handgun. You ready? He nodded. Let's do it. He opened the door, and I swung inside, arms out, with my weapon pointing into the empty room. I saw nothing but blank walls and a staircase leading down. It smelled like thruster exhaust inside. I put my index finger up to my mouth to indicate silence, and motioned to Nate that it was clear. He made his way in slowly.
He must have thrust it down to the bottom. Let's go on foot. I don't want him to hear us if we can help it.
He nodded and followed close behind. It grew darker as we moved from the open doorway down the stairs. Dull lights on the walls splashed color oddly, giving each stairway a pale yellow glow. Opposite of the last set of stairs was a metal door framed in cement. The lights down here were different. They looked like they had been installed recently, and cast a bright white shine on everything. We approached slowly, keeping our steps silent across the cold, colorless floor. There was a problem. The door had no handle. I looked to Nathan as he had more experience with this type of thing. He motioned me back towards the steps and leaned in close.
I saw an article on something like this in my Tech Geek RSS feed the other day,
he said in a whisper. I shot him a puzzled look.
What are you talking about?
I whispered back.
It's like what they've had in air cars for a long time now, and even normal cars back in the day. No more locking and unlocking. When you get close enough to the vehicle with the key in your pocket, it unlocks automatically. I bet this door is the same. If you've got the signal key on you that matches this door, when you get close enough to it, it will open. I think he's in there, Matt. I can see a heat signature.
You can see a heat? What are you talking about?
Remember when I had my eye surgery done? I paid extra to get heat vision. I see something the size of a man giving off heat in there. I think that's why they chose this place as a hideout. From above, you wouldn't be able to detect him. Even with heat vision scanners, we're too far down.
You're sure you can see him through these thick walls?
You know how much I research a product before spending even half a cred on it. These babies don't lie.
He tapped his temples, pointing towards his eyes.
So what do we do? Wait until he decides to come out for groceries?
Nathan smiled. It was a mischievous smile, one that said, I was hoping you would ask.
It's a good thing they needed oxygen in that room and didn't install a door that sealed on the bottom. I've been wanting to try this thing out.
He pulled a little metal box off of his belt and laid it on the ground.
What is that?
I said.
You'll see.
He knelt down and opened the box. Inside of it was a small plastic stick with a button on the end, wired into the box with a long, thin cable.
This is the magnetizer,
he said with great mirth. He placed the magnetizer carefully to the side and then began to unfold the box. With all of the sides unfolded twice, it lay flat on the ground at about the size of a piece of paper.
Now watch,
he said simply, all the while retaining his boyish grin. He slid the sheet of metal silently underneath the door and then walked back to the stairway, the thin cable running from the sheet to the magnetizer in his hand. He waved at me to follow, and we walked back up the first flight of steps and around to the second.
Wouldn't want to catch a stray piece of door in the eye. Plug your ears,
he said. He took out some earplugs from a small pouch hanging from his belt.
A big fan of Batman?
I said.
Shut up, Selznick,
he said with a furrowed brow, putting one of his earplugs in. I think my comment hit a little too close to home, so I changed the subject.
So what does this thing do?
He refrained from putting in his other earplug.
The sheet of metal is actually two sheets being held together by little hinges, connecting them all, and allowing the pieces to fold. Between the sheets of metal, there are very powerful magnets, which are demagnetized. When I press this button, they will become magnetized. The thing is, they're placed to push away from each other.
You're telling me little magnets are going to get that door open?
He nodded.
Very powerful little magnets.
His smile was back. He put the other earplug in and held up the magnetizer. He gave me a wicked grin as he raised his thumb, and then pressed the button. I jumped. The sound, like a car smashed in a compactor, hurt my ears even with my hands over them. After recovering from the seismic shock, we rushed down to see the damage. What was left of the door hung crunched into the top of the doorway. We got on either side and raised our guns. Nathan waited, watching for my signal.
I want him alive, but don't be a hero,
I whispered over the rising dust.
You got it, boss.
I squeezed the gun in my hands, took a silent breath, and then strode swiftly through the doorway, looking for anything that might move. I blinked hard, thinking it was an illusion, a trick of the light with all of the dust from the door settling. My voice rang out against the smooth concrete walls in a dejected scream.
No!
Nate rushed in, joining me in the bare room.
There's no way!
I screamed. What Nathan had seen was an old power generator, about 6 feet tall and as big around as a man. He's got to be in here somewhere. We must have missed something. Let's double back. I activated my comm. Any activity up there?
Negative, Captain.
I stopped to calm myself with a few deep breaths. I couldn't lose it now. Not when we were so close. I rubbed my temples where I could still feel marks from the air goggles and began to reclaim my focus. We reached a dead end. What should we be seeing down here?
You should have gone down 13 staircases and reached a 20 by 20 room adjacent to the bottom stairwell.
So you're telling me there's nowhere else he could have gone but this room at the bottom of these steps?
That's right, according to these blueprints.
How old are they?
A few decades, sir.
Well, there's been some recent upgrading to the building down here. We must have missed something. It's got to be something that's not on those blueprints. We're going to see what we can find. Keep that perimeter tight.
Copy that.
Nathan followed me out of the room. Reaching the bottom of the steps, I leaned my head against the rail.
Are you all right, Matt?
We had him, Nate. I thought we had him.
He hasn't escaped yet.
Then where is he?
Let's make our way back up and find out.
You're right, Nate. I've embarrassed myself. I just want this so bad. He's got to be in here somewhere.
I know how much this means to you, Matt. Let's do this so we can eat that cake for your retirement party.
I knew I brought the right man down here with me. You're the only one who could... Hey, what is that? As I lifted my head from the rail, I noticed a thin black smudge under the staircase. Those must have been made from his boots, but it looks like he just walked right into the wall. I approached the wall and took a closer look.
He must have been hiding under the stairs until we went into that room. He's got nowhere to go. Come on, Matt, let's go get him.
Wait a sec. I think I found something here. You know anything about something like this? It looks like there could be a door here, but I don't see any seams in the wall.
We're wasting time, Matt. Let's go up and get to him before the others do. Don't you want to be the one to apprehend this guy?
I was feeling along the wall, immersed in finding any abnormality that might hint at what I hoped was there. It took me a few to process what Nate had said. I turned around and looked at him. Get over here and help me look at this wall, Nathan. That's an order. He slowly shook his head at me, then looked down at his big jet boots.
You don't want me to do that, Matthew,
he said, looking up again. Yes, I do. What are you talking about? He folded his arms, not moving an inch.
Come on, Matt. We're wasting time.
He started heading for the stairs. I ran over to him and blocked the path. Nathan, I'm giving you an order. Go and inspect the wall near that shoe smudge.
And if I refuse?
I raised my gun, unable to put up with anything more that would delay my search. I knew I was out of line, but he was picking the worst time to test my nerves. He let out a big sigh, his face forming into a casual but annoyed look, and walked towards the smudge on the ground. As he approached, a portion of the wall pulled back and slid to one side.
There. Are you happy? I took the signal key off him, Matt. He's dead.
He turned back towards me. His mouth turned up in an evil grin, and his gun raised.
Throw your gun over towards me, and your comm.
I had no other choice, but it took me a minute because I was so shocked. I threw my gun down first, and it tumbled near his feet. Then I pulled the comm out of my ear. This was my one chance. I chucked it at him as hard as I could, right at his face. He couldn't help but flinch and raise his hands up to stop it. It was just enough time for me to rush him. I lowered my shoulders as I lunged forward and plowed into his stomach. He gasped for breath as he fell back to the ground, his gun flying from his hand. I scrambled to get up and reach my gun, which lay just out of reach, but as I tried, he kicked the back of my left knee, and I fell back to the ground. The pain surged through my body like a screaming baby demanding attention. I tried to ignore the pain and army crawl to my gun. I picked it up and spun, just in time to see him get a hold of his weapon. I shot towards his hand, but it ripped through his forearm.
Oh!
He cried out in pain as the gun flew out of his hand. His arm was bleeding heavily, and he soon passed out. I crawled over to my comm on the ground. I need a medic down here, stat!
Yes, Captain. They're on their way down now.
We're on the bottom floor, and send the coroner too. I found Morris. Lowell killed him. I heard boot thrusters above, and looked up to see two men quickly dropping down past the stairs. They landed gracefully and ran to Nate.
His vitals don't look good.
That's because I shot him. He pulled a gun on me and murdered our suspect. Take an officer with you. He needs to be arrested immediately. The medic looked up. His eyes grew wide. Probably something that doesn't happen often on the face of a medic.
Yes, sir. He'll be detained while being cared for.
Thank you. Keep him alive. We need him. I thought about that one. They'll need him, I said quietly to myself. The medic was too busy to hear me. The back of my knee throbbed. I lay there thinking about how Nate could have been working for them under my nose all this time. A lot of failed missions made a lot more sense now. There were definitely times where we seemed to have everything under control, and then somehow a suspect would get away. I never thought to expect my best man and close friend. That, and the fact that it would be hard to get used to the idea I was retired, was all I could think about as they carried me up and out on a lift. My explanation of a mole working under me and the subsequent paperwork I had to fill out on that subject extended my day until the end of the night. They said I could come back and finish it later, but I was determined it would be my last day. I have to say, I have never eaten cake in so foul a mood as that night. I didn't think a man could eat cake and remain upset, but let me tell you, it can be done. But I did my best to act cheerful during the party in the office. People had taken time to decorate and prepare food for me, and I didn't want to ruin it. It was a great party. It would have felt good to take it all in and realize I was retiring. If I could just stop wondering if Nate really thought he was going to eat some of this cake. I'm sure he hadn't planned on getting discovered. Like I said, I was able to eat one piece of cake and remain in a foul mood. But after the second, I felt a little better. Back in my office after the party, I left all of my paperwork completed on my strangely empty desk and carried a few boxes to my car. It took me two trips, and on the last one, I turned to look at the office before flipping off the light. The empty bookcases, the fake plant I never liked, the desk I had sat at for so many years, working to find leads. I could leave all this behind now, knowing that Nate would be forced to give my colleagues everything they would need. With his inside information, they could finally take down the big operation of illegal technology smuggling I had been fighting for some time. I hadn't wasted all my time in here. No, sir. It was a good last day. I flipped off the light and walked back to my car, not looking back. For the first time in these tumultuous 20 years, I could let it go. I was able to leave work without taking it home with me. And for maybe the first night in two decades, I slept like a baby. The end. Hey guys, this is Dan Absalonson, the guy behind the creation of this podcast, with the help of my droid R2D3PO, of course. I hope you enjoyed my second short story, His Last Day. This particular story was one of the first ones I've submitted to a really cool website called critters.org. It's a place where writers of speculative fiction can submit their work and get critiques. The only cost to you is that you critique other people's work. If you're a writer, I highly recommend checking it out at critters.org. I've got three promos of my favorite sci-fi podcast novels to play for you guys after this, and then a special promo right at the end. Find me on Twitter at DanDanTheArtMan and on Facebook /DanDanTheArtMan. Really want to thank you guys for listening, and I hope to see you next month. Talk to you later. Music used was Fresh Deep Drum and Bass, Volume 2, by DJ Kraus, found at archive.org, and sound effects used are from freesound.org. This podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works
3.0 U.S. license.
Joey Provosky has been thrust into deep space against his will. Aboard the SS Acid Rat, he and the crew are being pursued by the police in an intergalactic chase. But once the delivery is made, Vic, the captain of the SS Acid Rat and owner of V&A Shipping, decides to take a gamble with the crew and their pay. In an attempt to double their money, they need to get a shipment of beer for the celebration of the planet's long-awaited delivery. If they fail, they get nothing. It sounds so simple. Perhaps too simple. Tune into V&A Shipping, a podcast novel by J.R. Murdoch. For more information, please visit ofgnomesanddwarves.com. V&A Shipping, when it has to be there, dead or alive.
When Ishmael Horatio Wong is orphaned by a flitter crash, he must make some hard decisions about how to survive in a company-owned universe. With limited time and fewer options, he lands a job as the newest hand on the solar clipper Lois McKendrick and learns the importance of a good cup of coffee. If you're a fan of space opera but always wanted a story with a different kind of hero, meet Ishmael Wong. He isn't the lost son of an overthrown monarch. He isn't the captain of the ship. He's not even an officer. He's not rich or tall or handsome. He's not particularly bright. He's just an average guy trying to make his way in the universe. In the tradition of Half Spacesuit Will Travel and Farmer in the Sky, Quartershare begins the story of profit, confusion, and the heroism of day-to-day in the deep dark. Set sail with Ishmael, Pip, Beverly, and the rest of the crew of the Lois McKendrick in Quartershare, a trader's tale from the golden age of the solar clipper. A new science fiction novel by Nathan Lowell. Find it on patiobooks.com today.
In a lonely corner of the galaxy, a single silver starship travels between the stars.
Hey, voice guy, why in tarnation are you talking about some starship? This here story is about how me and my folk were kidnapped.
But...
Just a moment, human. This story is about my mission, not about you.
Okay, Mr. Smartship. What is your mission exactly? Don't remember, do ya?
I'll remember the mission.
You don't remember nothing, you big lug. Now hush up and get out of here.
I remember just fine.
I'll remember stuff.
You don't remember nothing, Zeke. Now just you get over there and stay out of my way.
As I was saying.
As you were saying nothing. You don't have any idea what you're talking about.
Be quiet, human, or I'll jettison you out into space.
Just you try it.
Galaxy Bellies, a podcast about a ship and some humans from the Appalachians. They might just take the universe by surprise. To hear more, search for Galaxy Billies and subscribe on iTunes or go to www.irreverentmuse.com.
I can terminate all of you at a moment's notice.
Sure you can, you sissy starship. You'd be nothing
without
us. Oh,
shut up, all of you.
October 1st, 2110, 1022 GMT. Following the assassination of the American president, the generals who have seized power initiate World War III, launching a surprise attack against the Eurasian coalition's forces throughout the Earth-Moon system. Across the orbits, tens of thousands of particle beams and lasers blast away at one another. The goal, crush the other side's weaponry, paving the way for nuclear bombardment of the cities. As Inferno becomes Armageddon, the rogue commando unit, Autumn Rain, embarks on one last run. The imprisoned spymaster, Matthew Sinclair, plots his escape. and his former protege, Claire Haskell, capable of hacking into both nets and minds, is realizing that all her powers may merely be playing into Sinclair's hands. For even as Claire evades the soldiers of East and West, amid carnage in the lunar tunnels, the surviving members of the Rain converge upon the moon, one step ahead of the Eurasian fleets, but one step behind the mastermind who created Autumn Rain and his terrible final secret.
Released by Bantam Spectra on May 25th, The Machinery of Light completes David J. Williams' Autumn Rain trilogy, which began with The Mirrored Heavens and was continued in last year's The Burning Skies. Learn more about the world of the early 22nd century at www.autumnrain2110.com.